Calling the meeting of the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee to order. Our first action of business is approval of the agenda. Are there any suggested changes or modifications, Mr. Graham?
Thank you. I would ask that we move the action item. I guess it's the only action item.
Only action item.
But I would ask that we move it to the end of the agenda.
I can talk.
The end of the agenda.
Okay, so we're moving area 3, action items, to after 5, subsequent Finance Administration and Oversight Committee agendas. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman.
I also have a motion at the end of the agenda, which I would like to be reminded of.
Okay. We shall remind you at the end that you have an additional
move to get us into executive session.
For, I think we have a motion.
Okay. And Mr. Zimmerman, did you have an additional comment?
I was going to move the agenda with Mr. Graham.
Let me move it.
Okay, that has been moved. Is there a second to
let me move the executive session because we've got so many things.
Take a vote on the agenda.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Yeah, actually, I'm not sure that in this committee we should do it. We need to.
Need
to have the.
Well, someone remind me. Do it.
I will try to remember to remind you, and if this anybody else catches it, please do. Okay. Okay. So the motion is to move action items, the area 3 action items, until after 5. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion has been moved and seconded. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Okay. We have approval of the agenda. We have the minutes before us. Are there any additions, changes, modifications, corrections to the minutes? If not, without objection, the minutes are approved as presented, which brings us to our information item, the 2011 preliminary budget. Mr. Cato.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the board. At September's F&O meeting, I asked for guidance from the board regarding the development of my proposed budget for 2011. We describe Metro's current financial condition as well as business assumptions which focus on the primary drivers which will dictate the constraints for the budget development as we move forward. We have contractual labor cost increases. We also are looking at fair increase of constraints per the board policy as well as the constraints of the various jurisdictions and their inability to increase contributions to the organization. In addition, I provided the committee with assumptions of current revenues and ridership projections for the year, which reflects a decrease given the economic climate in the region. And we also provided to you some other constraints of revenue growth for 2011. Basically, if we move to the first page, this presentation will be separated into two parts. First, the operating budget, and the proposed budget is $1.4 billion. In addition, we will propose this year's and the first year's element of our capital budget and our six-year preliminary capital plan. And I want to make that very clear, that what we're bringing today is the first presentation on this budget. There will be many meetings, many changes, many adjustments as we go through this process and as we deliver the budget to you in its final details in June.
May I stop you for a moment?
Yes.
There? I think your point is a very important one, and we need to focus on that for a minute. I think the staff has done an excellent job in preparing a very solid proposal to us with lots of backup and lots of material here. There could be a tendency for us to start going into great detail on what's here, but I think what we want to do is hear what they have to say, ask questions. If there are major issues that we want to raise, like why is this the way it is, that's fine, but try as much as possible to make this a presentation where we do stop it in order to get clarifications and maybe raise points or issues as we go. But recognize that we will go into this in substantially more depth starting in January. Yes, Mr. Graham.
And as a preliminary comment, might I add that the experience of last year is very fresh on my mind. And last year, I don't know if others can speak for themselves, I just felt that we had month after month of, you know, a great deal of media attention that predicted the sky was going to fall and that stations were going to be closed and everything else. And I think it's very important at every juncture that, that we emphasize that, well, like right now, we're at the very beginning of what is going to be a 7-month, 8-month process. And these things are all subject to change. And this is all subject to us maintaining our flexibility as a board in dealing with these issues, as well as the management's flexibility in responding to the board's directions and interests. And so, you know, we don't need headlines in December about an action that is going to not be finalized until June. And so, I mean, this is, I agree with what you've said. I think we should do this in a very deliberative manner. And let me conclude by saying, as chairman of the board, I think that we first have to understand very, very well the gap. We have to understand just what is the basis for this forecast of this gap, whatever the amount is, and examine that as our first deliberate step, which before we start figuring out other issues which are in response to the gap. So I hope we can proceed in that kind of deliberate path. Thank you very much.
Are there any other comments, or shall we move ahead? Mr. Cato.
Thank you. The biggest increase in our expenditure projections are not new. Their labor costs, primarily step and longevity increases, increases in insurance costs and liability, as well as the increase in the demand for access services. In addition to those pressures, we are also experiencing a fall off in revenues as a direct result of the economic factors in the region, primarily unemployment, which directly affects bus and rail ridership. In addition, our guaranteed revenue contract for advertising will be expiring this year, just at the time when firms are advertising less and advertising revenues have fallen, again, due to the economic condition. And the committee members have all expressed in whole and individually a direction to me to hold the subsidies as per the board resolution, and that's assuming that there will be no increase in jurisdictional subsidies. An additional guideline that was provided in the September resolution was for the staff to conduct town hall meetings. 4 meetings were conducted, 2 in Maryland, 1 in Northern Virginia, and 1 in the District of Columbia. At these meetings, the overall insight that were gained was that we should not reduce service, not cut service, look at some type of adjustments in revenues to offset the gap that we currently project in the budget. We also receive input from Metro employees, our union partners, which we have incorporated in our budget development process. So in September, again, I communicated at that time a budget gap of $144 million, which is primarily driven by labor, pension, and health care increases, paratransit demand, and energy increases. If you look at this slide, you will see that we've had a major increase in our fringe benefits. We project an increase of paratransit of 25%. As well as a 6.3% increase in utilities in energy. Again, there's a lot of detail behind this projection, and in order for us to give you the best overview that we can at this point in time, I'm asking that Carol Kissel, our Chief Financial Officer, take you through the detail of the expenses as well as the revenue projections for 2011.
Thank you. Mr. Cato has taken you through some of the drivers of the revenue and expense and the picture that we gave the committee in September, where we first communicated a $144 million gap. since we are in the first quarter of this fiscal year, we have also communicated that we've had a decline in revenues due to ridership. And as a result, given that latest forecast that we have provided in revenues and expense for the first quarter, we are now communicating that that $144 million has grown by $31 million. And as a result, you now see a budget gap, which we are forecasting for next year, in the amount of $175 million. I want to take you through how we've developed that new forecast for $175 million. The revenue side, in terms of the revenue side, we actually are looking at the decrease in revenue. We've looked at our aggressive budget for this year, where when we put our budget together for 2010, we assumed a 3% ridership growth from 2009 levels. Because we are seeing the fall off this year and not meeting that aggressive ridership growth, we actually developed a baseline for FY11 that looked at 2009 levels and only increased that amount by 2% of ridership growth in rail. We looked at the same thing for bus, and we took 2009 bus ridership levels and increased that by 1.5%. And as a result of that, that made the change in revenue for our new baseline projections for 2011. If we look at the expense side, we are forecasting a slight increase in expenses from what I first gave you the picture in September of about $8 million. Fare transit, labor and services are the largest increases of that. Salary and fringe assumptions, which I gave in September, were a very broad 3%, which included the steps and COLA and longevity, and were very preliminary. The fringe that we have now, the information on fringe, which is mainly pension and health, have increased by 11.5% over year to year. With the current position that the Metro Board is taking on wage increases, we have slightly adjusted the salary assumptions downward, but some of that is being offset by additional overtime, additional bus training hours that we actually took out of the budget this year and we're actually putting back in because we realize that we need additional bus training hours. And we're also actually have a slight increase in some slight operational increases by about $1.8 million, which means operational headcount, if you will.
Ms. Kissel?
Yes.
Just a moment. Mr. Gene Cole?
Yeah, I had some preliminary questions on the expenditure increases or decreases in some case, and comment made on page 18, which states basically a 6.3% increase in energy and utility costs for some of the earlier reasons for the gap. But here we're showing a decrease in fuel and utilities. So I'm a little confused. One says it was a result of increased costs, and the other case we're actually reducing. And, can you kind of elaborate on that?
Sure. In the September forecast that we provided, we had the $144 million was made up of the fact that we would have an increase in energy cost from this year, 2010 to 11. That's what we were projecting. When we look at now increasing more costs, we look at the decrease in fuel and utilities. Because we're actually putting in planned hedge contracts for this year, for next year, and because of the lower propulsion rates that we're seeing in the utility market, we actually are going to put in long-term contracts that actually lock in lower prices. And as a result, we're able to offset for next year, lock in lower prices for next year. And that's the difference that you see.
So you're already seeing the reduction this year already?
What I'm saying is we're seeing the reduction this year, and we should see that reduction this year, but we're going to put in long-term contracts that lock in lower prices now. That'll effectuate FY11, and that's why you see the decrease there.
The other question that I had answer to that question.
Okay, let me just make sure that we're all talking the same language here. Ms. Kissel, page 18 is what did you assume when you came to us in the beginning, in the beginning of the month, or last month?
Right.
Or September, I'm sorry. And page 19 is what do you think today? So at that point, you're saying you thought it was going to go up. Now you think it is going to go down, which shows the difference between those two times.
That's
down
correct.
Where it was or down overall?
It is. Let me make this more clear.
Everything is compared to fiscal 10.
Yes.
Right?
Well,
everything
except
is
when it's compared to the September estimate, and both things are used in here. So which one are we talking about?
Well, and so are comparisons to
this 9. This page on 19 is comparing the estimate that we gave you in September of the $144 million. And what I'm attempting to do is explaining now the difference in the budget gap, why it's at $175 million.
But so the decrease that's shown that occasioned Mr. Jankola's question,
yes,
is a decrease of the forecast now relative to what it was in September.
That's correct.
But it is still an increase over FY10.
That's correct, because here, as you can see, there's some puts and takes. As we've done more analysis, costs have increased, and we've been able to look at things where we can actually take costs down. And
okay,
as a result
it's
of that,
going up, it's just not going to go up as much as you thought it was in September.
That's correct.
Okay, so we're clear now. The comparison on page 19 is against what you thought and what you've documented on page 18.
That's correct.
September.
Mr. Giancola,
yeah,
you were still going.
Yeah, the other question I had was, do you have a 2.98 increase in services? What services are we talking about?
That's primarily hardware and software maintenance contracts that we have had to put in place as a result of new systems that we've put in place last year and this year. And as a result, these are all maintenance contracts for NextFair, and I have a list. We can go through them. But they're mostly hardware and software maintenance contracts for data centers, smart trip, servers, new servers that we've been put in place, and the upgrades that have been improved last year and this year.
So this is over the budgeted number?
That's correct. Over the, this is over the, again, this is taking you from the September number to now. We have new information that we have to increase that $144 million gap more because we have other expenses that we've actually understood.
Okay, my last question, 9.32 increase in other, mainly insurance. What's the other?
The other.
What's the magnitude of the other versus the insurance?
I don't have the answer to that question, but I do know that the 9.32 is mainly insurance,
okay,
increase in costs and liabilities.
But let me note again, going through all of these numbers, all these numbers show up one more time, a little bit later in some more detail. So you may want to let them get to that stage before we
dig.
And then we'll do it in much more depth come January and February.
Yeah, I'm attempting just to give you a picture of how our forecast has moved. The one that we gave in September was very preliminary. We had not actually done a detailed budget call from our budget preparers in each of the departments. And actually, we did that between September and October. And what I'm showing you now is a result of that, which shows the gap that's increased.
Ms. Hudgens, did you have a question?
I'm going to try and stick to your response. But,
thank you.
But the question that I was raising is, when will we see the details? Because I think that is the...
Okay, and I think it's important because there's a tendency for us now to just sort of jump to those right away. We'll see it in one more level of detail a little bit farther on, and then in much more detail in January and February. Ms. Hewlett, did you have something?
I can wait. Thank you.
And Mr. Graham?
Yeah, just the major point here, correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's the loss of revenue which is the major driver in terms of the increased gap from September to today.
Yeah, we're looking at $23 million worth of it. Ms. Hewlett.
And a lot of that is a direct correlation to the unemployment rate, you said?
It is a direct correlation to unemployment. And we're seeing it
in the peak hours.
Actually, we're seeing it in the peak hours more, and the off-peak, we're seeing a slight growth of ridership, but in the peak hours, we're seeing the decline.
And actually, there's a differential between the morning and the evening peak. The morning peak is people going to work, so the morning peak is, in fact, matching the employment change. If we can keep going.
On page 20. So... as we've determined, the budget gap, as we see it now, is we're projecting will be $175 million. The only way to close the a substantial portion of that gap, given the guidelines provided by the committee, is to constrain cost, look at resource efficiencies within each of our departments, look at increasing fares more than the current policy, and modify or reduce or eliminate service where efficiencies make sense or where cost far outweighs the revenue captured, and to utilize preventative maintenance funds from the capital budget. As a result, we would then potentially borrow funds to fill the hole that we would have in our capital program. With the lack of an increase in subsidy, these are the only options that actually we have looked at. If you turn to page 21, I wanted to take you a little bit through some more detail of how we created the baseline, and I can go through
there's
this.
There's an option.
Yes, go ahead.
There's another option, and it may not be an option, but it should at least be noted as an option. And I discussed this yesterday with staff, and that is that we, at this point, have a full expectation of $300 million additional dollars in what we have loosely and probably inaccurately called dedicated funding. But it includes $150 million from the federal government and $50 million each from our three major jurisdictions. And again, I say this may not be an option, but at least it should be considered to be on this list as to how we can skillfully use $300 million of this new capital money in a way to address some of our needs.
Okay. On page 21, when creating the baseline for FY 2011, because we saw the ridership growth lagging in, we actually looked to 2009 levels to build the baseline for 2011. And as a result, we assumed the 2% growth in rail ridership and the 1.5% for bus, but using the 2009 baseline. The assumption is confirmed when we look at the average rail fare, which has decreased by 8 cents and is a direct result of an increase in growth for shorter trips on the system versus longer trips. We took a picture of between January and June and compared 2008 to 2009 within that six-month period and saw that we had almost a 20% increase in shorter trips compared to year-to-year comparison to 2008 and 2009. In addition, revenue projects for 2011 were normalized for one-time events that we experienced in 2010, primarily the inauguration, which was the largest impact that we had on revenue for this year, which is why we had to normalize for that year. And we also looked at the normalization of revenue from a small loss that we received from the Red Line accident. Another adjustment that was made and will be assumed for 2011 is a reduction in the amount of revenue we recognize with respect to fair media that is not yet used. And let me explain this, that deferred revenue is going down as is lost media. We've had, we've eliminated Metro checks. And because we had Metro checks and we did not have a very good reportable function to determine how many of those Metro trusts were lost or unused. We had a methodology in accounting back in 2007 that determined that we would book 5% of deferred revenue for Metro checks. As a result of the elimination of Metro checks and the greater use of Smart Trip cards, we actually have the technology and the capacity to get better reporting on how that media is being used. And as a result, we are making the determination that the 5% deferred revenue methodology should be reduced to 3% because we have better information on how that media is being used or not being used. As a result, that impacts the budget by about $11 million, and that actually is something that we would like to review and introduce and modify that policy.
Let me expand on that just slightly. One of the results of going to electronic media versus fare cards is when you have fare cards, people don't use the whole fare card, the whole value on the fare card, and so nickels and dimes end up in dresser drawers and trash cans and taken to Alaska and all sorts of other things like that. And after they've been missing for a while, we finally declare them as revenue because, in fact, we sold the fare card, and we don't declare value when we sell the fare card. We declare value when somebody actually takes the trip. So we have all of this, what's called deferred revenue, sitting on the books, and it's sitting on the books because nobody's used it yet. We've sold the value, but we haven't seen the use. When we start switching to electronic fare media, people tend to keep track of their Smart Trip cards, and if nothing else, we know that they have their Smart Trip cards with value on. So what happens is they actually use those nickels and dimes. They don't have the fare cards that get lost. They don't have the Metro checks that they get and then never use and get lost also. So as we move in this direction, we will have less and less of deferred revenue that we can declare, and should we move in the next step that we're now working on, which is going to use of credit and debit cards directly in the gates, we'll get down to practically nothing in deferred revenue. So it's one of those issues that we are improving the service for our customers, we're making it better and more efficient, we're reducing to some degree our own costs in fare collection, but we're losing money through, or losing value through the inability to do this, and so this will continue for the next several years.
That's right. That's exactly right, actually. On page 22, this actually just shows the numbers of what I just explained. So we look at the actual ridership for 2009 in revenue. We normalize for the inauguration. We normalize for the unused fare media. If you recall, we had Obama Smart Trip cards, which we were very successful, and we assumed that people took those and them home as souvenirs. We normalized for that. Slight normalization for loss of revenue for a red line accident, and we come up to a bottom line of a new baseline, if you will, of 2009, and then we increase that by the 2%, which is which we feel is a very prudent growth rate given what we're looking at now in terms of ridership and revenue.
Clarification. I want to make sure we understand what's happening, since this is, as Mr. Graham pointed out, the main driver of the issue right now on the fair side. Normalizing for the first two, the Obama inauguration and the third thing, the red line accident, one of those is saying our previous year is skewed in some way because of a couple of one-time things. We're not going to have an inauguration next year, so you can't just use last year's number as a base without taking without recognizing that. So you make an adjustment that says, well, assume you don't have an inauguration, in effect, what would 2009 look like?
That's correct.
And then you have an incident that works the other way, that one boosted revenue, the other hurt revenue. And you take those out, so you say, a year that looks like 2009 that didn't have these two extraordinary events, which happen to work in different directions, what does it look like?
That's correct.
And that's your best estimate of 2009 without those things. And then you add in a factor for growth. And you've now decided that that's to be 2% over from 2009, fiscal 2009.
Yes.
Your projection for fiscal 11 is 2% over 9.
That's correct. And we did that because we're seeing the revenue loss this year.
Well, let me ask you this. If you looked at it right today, if you look at the current fiscal year, your adjusted projection for ridership would give you a revenue, a negative revenue, presumably, of how much?
For this year, for this quarter?
No, your projection for the year. What do you think it's going to be at the end of June when we close out this fiscal year? What do you think the FY10 over FY9 is going to look like?
Well, we have seen reductions year-to-date of 11% ridership in bus and almost up to 10% in ridership in rail.
Compared
rail
to budget.
Ridership,
yeah, but I'm talking
compared to budget.
Yeah. Compared to budget. I'm sorry. Compared to budget. Right. And what's happening is we are seeing that decline. In rail, actually, we're seeing the decline actually start to level off. So now we're seeing, instead of the 10% in rail reduction we saw at the beginning of the year, it's starting to decline almost to 7%.
Now you're comparing different things. I'm talking about what happened from 09 to 10 in the same number you're using there.
Yes.
When we look at 10 in the end and we compare it to 9, where do we think it's going to be? We think it's going to be minus something. Is it going to be minus 1%, 2%, 3%?
To date it's 8%.
You think it's going to be minus 8%? And then you're telling me that you think FY11 compared to 9 is going to be plus 2?
Let me correct that statement. I apologize.
Good.
Compared to actual.
Yeah. Actually, the forecast that I provided last month, year-to-date, we were at 7%. What I have forecasted is that by the beginning of this year in January, we would actually start to pick up ridership. And we were forecasting, at the last month's forecast, we forecasted that we would actually come in at the end of the year on budget. That's what we have forecasted currently.
So you think you're going to be at zero?
We think that we're going to be at zero.
Which is how you can get to doing 2% over for the next year.
That's correct.
Not being an unreasonable number.
Now, that can be aggressive.
Yeah, because in the last year, the Washington metropolitan area, for after I don't know how many years in a row of unbroken growth, I understand lost about 13,000 jobs. Mm-hmm. And the forecast now for the next year, I understand, is, it's one in the Washington Business Journal anyway, was about 24,000 jobs. Mm-hmm. So I guess the question is, if we're still losing jobs, and we're forecast to lose more jobs than ever next year, mm-hmm. why would we think that we're going to have so much recovery between January and June that you're going to go from being your minus 7 or whatever it is to being on target?
Because we're seeing a less of a decrease every month, and we're anticipating that because
of an extrapolation.
We've done an extrapolation with a model that we use. It's a Cambridge model, the economic data that plugs in the region's unemployment and the ridership that we've experienced and what we've looked at over the last 4 months of this fiscal year. And it makes the determination that we will recover at the end of the year. And that could be...
Mr. Zimmerman, may I comment? That, again, this is an assumption that is obviously fraught with peril. Any assumption of this sort is, and that's one of the problems that budget offices always face when they try and put these together. And I think we have correctly identified, or you have correctly identified, that what essentially the staff is doing is saying, we don't think we're going to go above or below the 09 level when we come in at 10. And
that's
so
what I wanted to know
at the end of 10,
2%
right.
was reasonable for 2011.
And then they're going to have to say, okay, that means we go back to 09, we use 09 as our base, and then move forward from there. If they do that, one of the things they also will do is come back to us in February or March and say, we now have an update, and this is what it looks like at the last possible moment. And they'll probably do another one when we do, before we do the final budget approval. So, again, this is, at this stage, as you point out quite correctly, a very, very difficult estimate, but it's one that we will get better at as we get closer and closer to budget approval. Mr. Graham.
Just quickly, and also, I think Chris makes some, Mr. Zimmerman makes some very good points, but I think it's also important to recognize what types of jobs are being lost. Because the District of Columbia, while our unemployment is up, we have gained 5,000 jobs, but they're jobs for educated, certified, trained people, and so as you and I were just talking, the greatest impact may be, in fact, be on the bus ridership of these losses rather than on rail. But so it's just to add that further factor, because we've actually had a gain in jobs in the District of Columbia, and I think the same thing has happened in your jurisdiction of types of jobs.
But there's, you know, this is a difficult reach, and I think Mr. Zimmerman has carefully identified what it is. Mr. Giancola.
Ms. Kissel, this is more of a knit and net kind of thing here, but if you look at the ridership growth in 2011 of 5.09 that you show on the sheet, I look on page 21 and take the $2.25, the average rail fare, mm-hmm. multiply those two numbers, I come up with over 11.25 or 3 thing, and so I'm not sure the math is right there, unless there's some other factor you're using there that I'm not aware of. In other words, I'm looking at the 5.09 time your average rail fare.
Right.
So you may want to take a look at that when
okay.
you update it. Okay.
Thank you. Coming down. Now, we can provide some more detail later, but we have
a lot. I presume you will.
Oh, well, we definitely will. But we have, I think Mr. Graham's point is a good one, because we do see a decline in bus more, which does not generate as much revenue, and the decline in rail is actually, you know, it's getting better. It's not declining as rapidly, actually. It's starting to reverse, and that's where a lot of the revenue is being driven. On page 23, so as we look at the bus projections for 2010, we normalize for the same type of thing that I just presented to you for the rail. We used the 2009 base and increased that by only 1.5%. In addition, we also adjusted the base revenue for various fare integration changes that we implemented in the second half of 2009, elimination of paper transfers and the fare integration discounts that we appropriated. And if you look at the next page, on page 24, you can see what that looks like. Again, the rail ridership and revenue for 2009 normalized for the elimination of the fare integration, paper transfers, balance transfers, which then provides you with a net number to increase the 1.5% over those levels.
Let me ask a quick question on
yes.
this one. Fare integration essentially is what we did before we had balance transfers.
That's correct.
What we did is we transferred money from rail revenues to bus revenues to make up for the fact that the transfer was entirely on the side of bus. And so very correctly, in this case, bus gets that money back again, or loses that money because they're not getting the transfer. However, I didn't see on the rail side an equivalent $7 million going in because it's no longer making the contribution.
I think it's included, actually, in the average fare. We did not highlight it separately, but
shouldn't be in the average fare. It's beyond average fare numbers. It's a bookkeeping transaction beyond average fare. So you may want to...
We'll take a look at
that. Yeah, we don't need to solve this now, but you may want to take a look at that, and that should, you know, at least given the way you're presenting this right now, should at least mitigate our problem by
sure.
a little bit.
Okay.
Any other questions on this chart? Let's keep going.
If we go to page 25, the Metro Access ridership demand through October is 19% above last year. And the current average fare is below budgeted levels by about 36 cents. We're looking at this trend and trying to take corrective action primarily on the performance contract where we can effectuate that change. However, the 2011 budget estimates almost $2.4 million passengers, which is about 15% over the approved budget. So those are things that are driving the additional cost as well. And if you look on the next page 26, you can see actually the budgeted revenue for ridership or Metro Access revenue, and then the growth that we're assuming, which is 15%, which provides you what the new baseline is for 2011. On page 27, Metro also has other revenues, which make up a smaller portion of our revenues, but they're still very critical to our budget. Parking revenues are currently under budget by 7%, or about $1.2 million. And although utilization is standing at about 90%, the decline in revenue is due to the meter usage. We're looking at our meters are not being utilized. If you recall, we actually had a fare increase in meters. That's the last fare increase, and we do see a very low utilization of meter use. Also, we see very low revenue relative to parking permits. We charge $55 a month to get reserved parking during the morning hours at a set time, and actually we see a decrease in the parking reserved spaces
question.
As well.
Yeah.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Wouldn't that, if we didn't have reserve space, fewer people take reserve spaces, doesn't that free up spaces that might be rotated more frequently and actually provide more revenue potential?
Yes, it does. And actually, there's a time, I think it's 9:30 in the morning, after 9:30.
10 o'clock.
Thank you. After 10 o'clock, the spaces can be used by anybody.
But you're missing my point. My point is that because it is tied up to 10 o'clock, I can have an empty space.
Yes.
On the other hand, if fewer people are interested in reserving spaces,
yes.
then I can sell that space.
Yes.
And I may get a customer who wouldn't be around after 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't clear to me that less demand for reserved spaces would necessarily be a negative factor on revenue. Because it's not clear to me the reserve spaces are a positive factor on revenue.
Well, I'm just communicating that we're losing. Our revenue is declining, and people actually buying reserved spaces, reserved passes.
But if we're trying to explain the overall decline in the revenue here, and you're offering that up as one part of the explanation, I'm questioning whether that really could be.
There is a decline. There is a decline, Mr. Zimmerman. The reason is that the people who go to those reserved spaces also pay the parking fee.
Yeah.
So what's happening is if they are not now paying the extra for the reservation, you're going to lose the revenue, both the parking fee and the reservation. So the reservation fee is what you lose. The parking fee you get from the other person, whoever takes their place.
And that isn't offset sufficiently by other people. I guess if we had high demand...
It's just a loss. That premium is a loss. You know, and to the degree that you lose that premium above and beyond what the parking fee is...
So on reserve parking revenue, you would have to distinguish between the reservation fee...
And the parking fee. And the parking fee, you're correctly saying, yeah, we do get. It's the reservation fee that we lose. Is that a big number?
It's very small, but it is...
But it's there.
There. And we do actually regularly reallocate the parking spaces on a monthly basis, where we see the reserved parking spaces are not being used. We open them up to the general public.
But so on balance, are more or are fewer people, in fact, parking?
The utilization for parking is remaining constant.
That's a measurement of how many spaces are empty? Or is it a measurement of how many cars are going through the garage?
It's a measurement. I don't know the answer to that question. Actually, okay, well, we'll find out.
I don't necessarily need the answer now, but I think we want to look at, is utilization constant? Does that mean it's the same number of people parking? Or does it mean you've got fewer people who are parking longer, which obviously would have revenue implications? What really is going on in people's behavior on parking? More specifically, in here now, because when we get farther down the road to where we make these and we have to look at things like this particular fee, we're going to really need to know what's going on in those garages and, you know, how people are reacting to current price points.
Ms. Hewlett?
I didn't have a question. I was under the understanding that parking was down. Information that I would need to.
Okay, we can get that month to month. The latest October utilization was 90%. It has been higher in the past, but it has remained constant at least this year.
I think the answer is this is one that they need to go back and take another look at. I think the answer is it's been relatively constant since we made our fare change, but it dropped after we did our fee change. But let's get that information and bring it back so we have good information as we go forward. Part of the discussion we want to have later.
Other non-passenger revenues that are down... or advertising revenue. And we'll be negotiating another advertising contract in a depressed advertising market, which is not always a very good position to be in. So as a result, our guaranteed revenue contract will be decreased in FY 2011, we anticipate. There's other revenues. And if you look at page...
I got a question on this page before we leave.
28?
This is 28.
Okay, On the previous page?
No, there's a page that's on there right now.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So let me just point out, on this page, the revenue picture, the year-to-year change in overall revenue will be almost an 8% decline from this year's budgeted levels. In September, we anticipated a $23 million decline and now has grown to $62 million, or 61.7. And you can see the changes in passenger revenue as well as in non-passenger revenue here. We show the actuals for 2009. We show the approved budget that we are in today. We show the forecast that we gave in September, which is a very broad forecast. And now we're showing what we think the change is for the preliminary budget for 2011.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Okay, so the first line on that table that says passenger, what is being measured there?
That is bus and rail passenger revenue and Metro Access.
Sorry?
All passenger revenue.
All passenger revenue. Bus, rail, and Metro Access.
Rider revenue. Is that right?
That's correct. Rider revenue.
Okay. And the estimate of fiscal 2009.
That's an actuals, actually.
The one on the left there is the actual.
That's correct.
How is that an act? Okay, I'm sorry. That's for last year. So the approved budget is 647 for this year.
That's correct.
Your estimate of where that is 654.
That's done.
That was the estimate that we projected in September. For fiscal year '11.
Actual, I'm sorry, that was the last forecast for the subsequent, okay. Well, I guess what we don't have there is we don't have what you think is going to happen.
They have what was budgeted in 2010, but not what they think will happen.
Let me explain the columns again, because in 2009, those are actuals. Those are last year's. And approved budget is the budget that we're living with today, that the board has approved. The third column is actually the estimate that we provided to the committee in September. And because we provided you this same chart in September, as it was requested that we provide a look to see where our budget gap would be, we provided that number. We wanted to make sure that you had that in front of you so that you can see now what we, in the fourth column, what our new projection is going to be for FY 2011. Again, it takes it from 144 million to 175.
The reason I had a question was I'm trying to compare, to reconcile this table with your statement to my earlier question about what you think is going to happen with ridership revenue this year and for the current.
What I don't have in answer to your question, what you're requesting is a forecast for this year. And that's, I think, what you want.
And I would answer that yes, you do, because you're using one. You said what it is.
That's correct. I just don't have it in the details.
And what I'm trying to reconcile is the 2% growth for basically 11 over 9, which was based on 10 being the same as 9. Mm-hmm. And the numbers up there, which I'm not sure say that. I'm not sure are consistent with that forecast.
The passenger line, let's take the passenger line.
Yeah.
When you look at the $17.6 million change, it's a change between the approved budget and the now preliminary budget, the 647.6 and the 630, which says that it's going to be a change of 2.7%.
I think I know where Mr. Zimmerman is, and let me try and answer his question for him. If I'm wrong, tell me, and let's let them try again. If you take the actual 2009 and you add 2% to that, you do not come out with a 2011. And the reason is that there are a whole bunch of other adjustments, such as the inauguration adjustment and all those other adjustments, that also affect that number. So it's only one of the changes that occurs. But what we're looking at is 2009 was 621. We then estimated that we'd be up to 648 by 2010. Then we estimated that 2011 would be up even higher. Now we're saying, no, it's not. No, instead, it's only going to be 630, which is lower than 2010, but higher than 2009. And they're going to have to come back and show us those machinations again. But basically, it's a number of different adjustments, only one of which is the 2% growth over 09. And yes, you're right, that number doesn't match.
And so I would say that, you know, what is our growth really projected to go over 2009? It's the difference in those numbers, which would appear to be less than.
The growth of revenue, yes, that's right.
Right.
Mr. Graham.
So she should re-examine that.
We're all going to get to understand these numbers better. Right?
What we're doing is raising this so that when we get it back, we're going to be able to say, oh, yeah, well, what about that? First, Mr. Graham, and then did you have something else, or was that it?
Does Mrs. Hutchins have something on this?
I was just noting that what we're really saying is the 2010 projection to date is what the adjustments you've made on those, normalizing the 09 coming in to 2010 to date, and then you're making a projection, but to date's going to be a different number.
That's correct.
In the end. and I think it would be helpful to just simply put that there, so when we see this again or we see whatever those adjustments are, we know how they progress through that.
That's what we'll have to do as we go through the revenues. Mr. Graham.
All right. I want to focus. Half of this revenue problem is relating to advertising. And I understand perfectly well what's happened to the advertising contract, but I am not ready to say, okay, fine, we're just going to take a $29 million hit, you know. And I think this is another one of those numbers where I know we're having discussions with management on advertising communications and so on and so forth. This is a number that we cannot just accept. in this budget discussion. We need to have an aggressive program to improve upon this revenue source. And so I don't need to, because this is crystal ball gazing in a way at the moment. But what I need to have from management is, I need to have from management is a strong plan to say this is how we're going to recoup what might otherwise be nearly $30 million, 50% of this revenue problem. And here's what we're going to do to make up for as much of this as possible. So I'm very uncomfortable with this being in here, $30 million, compared to what we have had in the past.
Again, this is where we are today. As we get closer to approving the budget in June, we will know what that contract is going to be. We will have different responses back from advertisers, and we're looking at other options. But this is a snapshot today.
Well, it's a projection today of a worst case.
Probable, I think.
Pardon me?
I think it's the most probable. Not a worst case.
This is based upon what we've seen with contracts around the country. This is not based upon the number we made up. We've looked at other contracts that have been awarded throughout the United States in transit industries. Chicago is the most recent, and that's the type of reduction that they've had by advertising companies. Again, we will sit down and look at various options. We will, as we get closer, have a better number, but this is the number that we have really in November or beginning of December. As we go through and get closer, we're better. We can finalize this number, but I can't guarantee you it's going to be higher.
When will we have the outcome of all of this?
Probably late spring. We're looking at proposals currently.
Well, then let's have this in the meantime. Let's have some research done on similar advertising contract situations in other states. Can we get that?
As part of our review when we get to this
right. Area. Right. And let's have a look at this. But just having this number without that type of information is really very unusual.
Okay.
This is 50% of what we're talking
about. I think Mr. Graham's point is an important one. And again, it just says this is a presentation at this stage. Every single one of these numbers we're going to want to go through in substantially more detail, and certainly the big ones, and understand them much better before we say, oh, yeah, this is what we're going to accept as revenues. Mr. Zimmerman.
Mayor.
I want to follow on that. We have two problems here. One is that we're in a recession, so advertising is lousy. But also, we benefited from having signed a long-term contract at the absolute historic peak of advertising in the history of Western civilization.
Including Greece?
I'm not sure about, how the agencies did back then, but as far as we know, there was never any better time to sign an advertising contract than we did before the dot-com bust happened. And the people who signed it on the other side, this has been a revenue problem for them all these years. This is a mistake they made that they've had to live with. So we've been benefiting by getting a whole lot of money that they regret having committed to us. And, of course, everybody in their industry knows that, too. So even under optimistic circumstances, even if the economy were doing well right now, we would not be able to forecast an advertising contract that got us what we got in the last one. And that's part of the problem. So we have these two things working against us. Now, what concerns me going forward and how this plays into this budget process is, number one, I'm concerned that you're not going to really have the answer until late in the spring, which is too late for us to really inform our budget process. But also that we may wind up with a trade-off. Because, I don't know that I want to sign into a long-term contract at the worst part, time in the cycle, and wind up for the next 10 years in the opposite situation. Well, how much do we want to commit the agency to when it's not the opportune time to sign that contract? On the other hand, you get more money when you sign a long-term contract. So there may be a temptation to plug some hole by prematurely signing a long-term contract scheduled in a way that gives us a little more money this year, but hurts us in the out years. And I think that's something that is going to be a theme throughout our budgeting. It's going to be short-term versus long-term. But this is one, since it's been brought up here, we should start thinking about now. Because there's just no easy way out of the fact that that's going to be a big hole because it will be hard to get back, even in a strong economy, to where we were before.
Ms. Hutchins?
No, I wanted a clarity as to what Mr. Graham was asking for, because I thought what we were saying in the advertising, and I think Mr. Zimmerman's discussion now has kind of highlighted that, is that the $30 million represents your guidance from what you've looked at.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're coming back with is, as with all of these numbers, is a refinement as to where we will be close to the adoption. The other dynamic as to how do we measure that. But I just wanted to make sure I'm not the same thing.
Tony, did you have Mr. Giancola?
Yeah, I have another question.
Okay.
What's other? It's about 20% of the total amount, and I guess you probably put it there just because you couldn't fit everything on the page.
Well,
you had to have a catch-all, but
it's made up of.
It'd be nice to have the detail on the other.
We definitely have it, and I'll just give you a sense of it. It's telephone revenue. We have pay phones out there that are vending machine revenue, car sharing revenue. We have other. It's a myriad of things, and we can give you the detail about that later.
Yeah, I just
give us
more detail
on the loss.
The loss is actually indicated here.
No, give us the detail on the loss.
I think that's what we're going to go through. But that's the frustration of what we're doing now is all of this stuff we will go through in more detail. And I think that's an important part of this message. All of us are really feeling as though we cannot accept these numbers the way they are. We're going to want to look at them more carefully. Before any of us considers any other actions that this board may take and any other considerations relative to either service or fares, we got to make sure we really understand this stuff and understand it and have cleaned it up. Ms. Hutchins.
I just like to add the clarification because we had that when we talked about the 2010 and where the projections were going. But this is the public document, and I really do think we need to put as much detail as possible for the what these numbers mean.
And I agree. The board directed us to provide a detailed budget book in January, which will have the detail of every cost and line item, from headcount to all the detail.
So hopefully at that time we can start digging through the numbers in great detail, as can our staffs and the public. I'd just like to comment on what this says. It says we are now looking at, compared to the budget for this year, a drop of $62 million in revenues, almost all of which is directly related to the economic situation that we all face and that all the local governments face. So we are having two different places where we're having that problem. One is the local governments, because their tax revenues are down, aren't able to subsidize Metro at a higher level than it did before. And Metro itself is facing that same kind of loss, which reflects what everybody else is doing. There's nothing unique here to Metro. Every government, every other agency is looking at the same type of loss. So the economy is affecting all of us in the same way. And that says when we have cost increases, we have fewer resources to try to deal with them.
We look at page 29. This actually is the expenditure chart, similar to the revenue, but it outlines all of our expenses by category. And as you can see, the expenses, we anticipate increased expenses from the budgeted, our current budgeted year to FY11, what we're assuming FY11 is going to look like, of about 8.5% increase. This is an $8 million increase from what we had provided in September as a projection for our expenses. Some of those expenses now have increased by $8 million. And the largest dollar increases are primarily in the pension and fringe benefit lines. We received, since September, actuarial reports, which actually provided us a larger level of detail and forecast to provide an increase in what those pensions and health increases are. the health increases are pretty consistent with the national trends that you see, that you're increasing by 8% year over year. Questions?
Well, you're going to go into this in a little bit more detail.
Yes, we will.
Why don't you do that, and as you do that, we'll ask questions, and we'll come back to this page.
That's fine.
Otherwise, we'll just ask a question and say it's on the next page.
That's fine. So if you looked at the paratransit...
Well, we can do what we've done in the other pages. I mean, we're not going to review all of this again, are we, for the present purposes?
Not today. We certainly will in the future.
Can't we just touch some of it? Well, we will in the future, but can't we...
Almost every one of these lines is on the next page.
Yeah, I'll have to do another slide or two just to see.
And then we'll come back if there's something they missed.
We can leave this slide up, the number slide up, and I can just take you through some of the detail.
I beg your pardon.
Paratransit is up by $27 million due to the growth in demand that we have forecasted, and services have increased due to the maintenance agreements that I talked about earlier, the maintenance and hardware agreements that have to be put in place. We've held materials and supplies primarily flat year to year, and we have done this by capitalizing parts for rail and bus, which provides us, they're capitalizable, and these are parts that actually extend the useful life of a bus and rail. So we've been able to hold materials and supplies flat. And purchase agreements and hedge contracts are expected to be implemented, which would take advantage of some of the lower energy prices and fuel that we're seeing actually today. And that makes up much of the expenses. On the non-personnel expense side, the key expense that you see that is growing there is in the casualty and liability insurance. Our insurance fees have gone up as a result of events that we've had in the policy year, including the Red Line accident, and more importantly, our increased amount of reserving for third-party claims as a result of the deaths for the June 22nd accident.
One of the questions that we've asked in the past is, we have a consultant that is assisting us on workers' compensation issues, and presumably there are substantial savings associated with what they've come up with, right? Because we're paying them money for the savings that we're getting. I presume when you come back to us, you will in fact show us what those savings are and how they offset the increases in other areas.
We will show you the detail. I will say with the preliminary review that we've done, specifically on workers' comp, we have definitely seen a decrease in workers' comp incidents year to year, and we will show the committee that. However, the costs have gone up because when you look at actuarial reports, some of these claims that have happened back in 2000 or late 90s are still being paid out, and those payouts are increasing actually because of costs. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, if you will, and sometimes they negate each other. But we will show you the detail on that.
And when you come back, would you show us all of that, and also how the reserves are doing and what's going on with the reserves? The other issue along this general line, it's not actually casualty and liability, is I do know that our Inspector General is doing a review of our inventory. And I think that feeds into a lot of this stuff also. We're going to need to see that before we move forward on some of the costs that are associated, particularly with supplies.
Leases are up slightly, and that's the result of leases on facilities such as medical service center, customer service center. Those are the primary expenses that are actually increasing. If you go to page 32, the salary and wages anticipated are increasing by 1%, and that's primarily due to the step and longevity. We have not included the 3% arbitration award, which could create a potential risk for our FY11 budget. The pension costs have increased. We've actually had our trusts. We have five different trusts. And the trustees this year have done a very good job at determining different methodologies to smooth some of the pension losses, as well as to amortize some of the liabilities over a longer period of time. As a result, we still see an increase in pension costs, but it would have been worse if we had not taken those actions. And again, health care costs are increased up by 8%, which again is consistent with the national average.
Can we now go back to that page that
Sure.
Mr. Graham wanted to talk about?
What are the assumed salary increases for non-represented employees?
We're assuming 0% for non-representative salary increases.
Okay. I was just maybe following up on Mr. Graham's question. You say later on that you're talking about a 1% overall increase in wages and salaries. Is that right? That's what you say on page... I have a hole punched in it.
Mm-hmm.
32. But if you look at salaries and wages here, it looks like it's something closer to 3 or something, more than 3. So
yes.
If it's 0 for non-rep...
It's 0 for non-rep.
And 1 for represented, how did we come out at 3?
We have actually step increases and longevity increases.
So we're increasing staff.
If I may,
there are step increases that are built in
based
upon a time level that a person is in a job, like an operator or a mechanic. Those automatically go up. The 1% is the overall salary increase.
So you're saying even if the union got a 0% cost of living increase, the members of the union would get roughly 3% in step and longevity increases?
It's 1.5 to 2. That's what we're assuming with the step and the longevity.
Okay, and this says 2.9. So what else goes into the 2.9?
Also, there's actually some bus training hours that I spoke about earlier,
okay,
which
great.
We took out of the budget last year, and we actually feel that we need to put back in because we have been impacted by that.
Apparently.
And there's a small amount of overtime that's related to that, and that's how it gets back up to the number.
Okay, I think Mr. Graham has identified some of the things that we're going to want to look at very carefully when you come back to us on this. Mr. Zimmerman.
This, what you're presenting today isn't really a budget. It's really the framework for a budget that you're going to present in a month.
That's correct.
So as you're looking toward that, I mean, I think there's a key item here on this page. You're telling us basically that you're making certain assumptions, as you were just discussing, about what personnel costs will be, which is a very large part of the budget. And that's essentially based on what your position is now in the current arbitration process.
That's correct.
That will ultimately be resolved, and of course how it will be resolved is unknowable, but the bounds of it are known. And I think it will be important, Mr. Chairman, that when the budget is presented, that it includes contingencies for that range of possibilities, so that we have a budget that, you know, maybe based on this set of assumptions, but that says, if midway through we find out we're wrong, here's the things we would do, you know, if the number were a different one than it was. I think we're going to be needing.
So what you're saying is you'd like to be in a position where, although we may assume the best of all results of that process, we will know, and even with the best of all results, that leaves us with a rather severe problem here.
You don't want to draw out the budget million. Later and start all over again.
Okay,
well.
So we want to have a contingency plan of what would we do if. Is that right?
That's what I'm saying.
So that's a pretty daunting request to the general manager.
Yes, it is.
Any other comments? All right.
Could I ask a general question?
Mr. Graham.
This might be a capital question, though, but it might not be.
Do you want to wait or do you want to ask it?
Well, I just wondered, this our most recent train accident was a very costly accident. Was this insured? Are our losses here insured in terms of replacement of these cars?
Yes, we have a property insurance with a deductible about $1 million.
So the vast amount here, the lion's share of all of this cost, is going to be covered by insurance?
Yes.
Will that have an impact on insurance premiums?
Yeah, there you go.
It already has had an impact on our insurance.
Already?
Because actually, if you recall, we were renewing.
The latest one.
The latest one, yes.
This past weekend
has already had an impact on.
This past weekend, no.
No, I'm talking about this past weekend.
Yes, I understand. No, it has not had an increase. This past weekend did not increase any of our fees for insurance, if that's what you're requesting.
But is it the first, would you want to answer the first question again then?
But yes, we are covered. This accident that we've had at Falls Church is covered under our property insurance.
Isn't there a big
and does the property insurance have the same drop down?
We have a self-insurance on our property, which is $1 million deductible. So the first $1 million we pay out of our pocket. And then after that, the damage assessment is made by the Delaware Rail Company, and our insurance company picks up the rest of those costs for replacement.
Okay, and then do we have that, do we have the drop-down then provision?
We don't have a drop-down provision. I'm sorry, I do not answer your question. Ask the question again, I'll have to
answer. Well, I think this has been very helpful to me, Linda. No. The question is, what is the impact? We have $1 million deductible, and then this insurance, the private insurance, covers it.
That's correct.
The balance of the damage. Assuming that there's a lot of damage here, I won't ask you how much at this point. But what impact will that have on our premiums for the future? Is there an additional cost pressure here, expense pressure here?
Yes, there could be. I don't know what that is right now, since it's very.
But it's likely, since.
But there could be a likely increase, and there could be an increase in our cost, as well as we would have a potential risk at putting together a policy, the same policy that we have today.
Right. But in any event, these cars will be replaced almost entirely under our private insurance.
They'll be repaired or replaced under the insurance. That's correct.
Any other questions? Do we want to move ahead? Okay, let's go.
Okay, so page 33, given the picture of where we are currently.
May I stop you for a second? Yes. Could we ask that camera move enough so we can see the screen? Thank you. A little bit farther. Yeah, if you stand on the other side, we're fine. Can you just move all of them over a little bit? Because part of what we're trying to do here is actually get a briefing.
What is it? What happened?
Okay. Thank you. I'm asking the cameras to move so we can see the screen. Thank you.
All right. Nice people to look at.
Okay, I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
Given the picture that where Metro currently is and the new baseline that we've just framed up for you, we are recommending to close the gap would require a combination of efforts of almost $33 million in reduced bus and rail service, fare increases, which would have a yield of almost $93 million, which is an increase over the current board fare policy, which is currently at 6%, and that would be an increase over the current board policy of $55 million. And a 6% would increase the revenues by $37.5 million. Metro Access growth containment initiatives, which we are looking at, about $10 million, and those are things like aligning the Metro fare access fare structure to twice the equivalent of the fixed route fare, and also establishing conditional eligibility and aligned free ride program policies such that the only conditional eligibility access customers would qualify for that service. We can provide more detail about those things at the next briefing, but those are some of the items that Christian Kent are looking at to modify and reduce the cost of Metro Access. We also are definitely looking at departmental reductions. As you recall, last year when we went through our budget, we actually took a reduction in our departmental or non-operation by about 313 positions last year, and we had a RIF. We, of course, are looking at that again, and we're looking at a $10 million cost reduction, eliminating customer service center on weekends, potentially looking at combining departments. Mr. Cato is making organizational changes, which would increase the span of control and combine organizational departments. And it's also reducing, and these reductions actually are currently being formulated, and we'll have detail on that when we provide the budget book in January. The additional.
Why don't you go back to that page, because I think it's a rather critical page. It's the one that has the general manager's recommendations on it. And I'd like to make a comment, and the comment is, we will not do this. Okay, we will not do what's on this page. I don't know what we will do, but we won't do this. The job of this authority is to provide mobility in this region. The thing that all of us are board members here for is to move the people, to help the economy, to provide options for people to get to where they need to go. We don't achieve that by raising fares. We don't achieve that by cutting service. So the very, very, very last thing we're going to do is look at fare increases and service decreases. Now, the economy is also making it almost impossible for this budget to make sense without something like that happening. But we as a board are going to look at this very carefully. We're going to find every possible cost cut. We're going to find every possible place that there can be more revenues so that we can, in the end, minimize the degree to which there are any fare increases or any service reductions. And I don't think there's a single member of this board who would disagree with that statement. And as a matter of fact, probably most of the staff people, if not all of the staff people, agree that that's what this is all about. Having said that, I want to make your problem more difficult. We need our capital program, which is the next thing we're going to talk about after we get done with the expansion of this. Our capital program cannot be depleted by constantly taking dollars away from our capital program in order to fund our operating program. We cannot be in a situation where last year we decreased our capital program by $10 million a year, every year forever, because we don't ever put that money back in order to do preventive maintenance. Earlier in this presentation, you said you were capitalizing some of the parts. So that's additional money that's coming out of our capital program. We cannot afford to take another $30 million per year, every year, out of this program unless we can see a place where we can put it back. And very honestly, in the 20 years that I worked at Metro, in the 3 years that I've been on the board, we have never gone backwards on preventive maintenance. We've never put the money back in capital and said, oh no, we don't need that in order to balance our operating budget. So my starting point, I think the state of Maryland's starting point is, no, we won't be using our capital to balance our operating budget. We will do structural changes in how we operate this place. Now, put that in the context of my first statement, and we have a real challenge. Mr. Grant.
Well, I don't want to repeat the entire debate of last year.
I think we will be starting in December, anyway.
But the District of Columbia disagrees with that point of view.
Yeah, we understand
that. Well, let me just say that, just in case people have the impression that we don't. And that, you know, the fact of the matter is that we have, hopefully, and tell us the status, please, of the $300 million in new capital funding, which the authority will be receiving, hopefully, very soon. What is the status of that?
Well, the status is in conference between the Senate and the House. The House has passed their bill and the Senate has their bill, and there's some differences, not in the amounts, but in the bills themselves. The way it is set up today, it requires that we use the $150 million federal dollars as well as the local dollars, because once you mix the two, once you mix $1 federal dollars with local dollars, the federal rules apply. That we use those for safety, either capital items or preventative maintenance on safety issues. And any recommendations that comes out of the NTSB as a result of their investigation of the accident. But we're just waiting for the conference committees to approve that for this year's budget, the federal budget, and for the president to sign it.
I think that's very helpful. And I think that is, I think the general manager is correct on both counts, is that we have to await, the actual stipulations and restrictions on the $300 million, which includes $150 federal, $150 local, $50 million coming from the District of Columbia. But in addition to that, the biggest wild card in this whole discussion is the finding of probable cause of the June 22nd rail accident. And what that is going to cost the authority in terms of taking remediation or repair or whatever the steps are that not only the public, not only the Congress, not only our governments, but the people will want us to take these steps. And where the money is going to come from that, because I don't see line item, NTSB probable cost finding, you know, repair work. It's not in this budget. And so, you know, that's another reason for me to emphasize and to keep this emphasis in mind, the early stage of what we're dealing with here, you know, because this is something that is necessarily going to have to unfold in major part over this period of months. And we would be very much assisted in all of this if the NTSB would issue its probable cause finding, which it is legally mandated to do and which it has not done, so that we can begin to wrestle with this very important element in our budget expectations. So, you know, just to say again, you've said this, Mr. Benjamin, and I know this, that we're at a very early point in this. We're going to have to be very tentative. We're going to have to feel our way through all of this. And that includes every one of these bullets.
And I think you and I agree that none of these is a done deal. At this point, we are just starting the process.
Right. And I hope the media will not report tomorrow fare increases of $92.5 million. I hope that is not the story, because this is a decision that has to go through month after month after month of deliberation. We have a tentative preliminary thought, you know, from our general manager, which we value and respect and want to consider, but it's just that and nothing more.
Are there other comments?
I just want to comment and say that the bullets to me really are a reflection of a format or an approach that can be taken, but I really think it would be better articulated in a priority that we see. That priority is more in line with the comment that you made, and that the budget structure or the budget resolution will keep as a priority that our agency is focused and is given the task of providing mobility. So to the extent possible, that's where we will be. I think the other part is the just simply solid good budgeting, in that we can't continue to use solutions that in the long term paralyze us. If you take your comment, Mr. Graham, and say that we're concerned about, for example, the NTSB results as to what financially will impact us, but given or not given the NTSB information, we still have a huge, huge commitment of capital. Therefore, any action that we take from our capital is only putting us back further. And it will imperil the mobility issue that we think we're tasked with here. So I think once you see numbers on a page, they will be the discussion. And there are quite a few there that I think will provide lots of angst. But I think the critical part is that there is a discussion. And the discussion is the most important part that we will have. None of us like any of the things that are on the page. The question is, how will we think about the priority that we have, and what type of reality are we going to place on a budget that is already strained by, one, our past actions. We have already made actions that make the authority more difficult in operating efficiently, as well as providing mobility for everyone. So we already are at bone marrow stage, and so we need to think about, are we going to be able to keep our priority? And some of this is you're going to have a discussion about. You cannot walk away from everything that's on that page, so you have to have some part of a discussion on the, but I think the priority is where we want to be, and that's going to be it.
Any other comments? Mr. Gene Cole.
Yeah, to build on what Mr. Graham has already said, and you're talking about someone who's a professional public works manager here. You don't like to take the capital program and use it for operations or things such as that. But in my experience, that's been necessary in several of my positions over the years. And I think it's helpful when you make those kinds of decisions to know exactly what the impact is of that transfer. In other words, if there's a capital program and it's in some sort of reasonable priority system, you can have lines in that program that says, okay, if we take so much from it, it's going to impact on these projects, very specific things. So it's a conscious, knowing decision to make when you do that. So I think that's the kind of data that I'd be looking for if we eventually do look at some capital transfers in our program. And certainly we have a lot of needs, but we hopefully have them in some sort of priority where we can make some decisions about
what won't be funded if we transfer X amount of dollars to another program or another system.
Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you recall, almost 2 hours ago when we started this discussion, I opened it up by saying this is the first look and snapshot of the budget. As we go through this process over the next 7 months, you're absolutely right. I am very aware that none of the numbers will look this way. They will change. But we have to begin somewhere. And that's what I'm asking for, and that's the purpose of this process, is for the board to determine in what areas are we going to make reductions or increases, and this begins that discussion. And there will be many discussions over the month, over the next few months, and I, too, as you communicated, Mr. Graham, that do not put these numbers out as a certainty, because I can absolutely assure you they will be different 7 months from now and several times before we get to that point. To address the issue about the business that we are in, we are in the business of providing services. That is clearly the mission of this organization. There are some ways that we operate those services that you can look at and adjust and save expenses, which is included in the $32 million. There are other issues that we're going to have to make some other type of decisions on at some point. Do we do A, B, or C? And those discussions, I suspect, will get even more heated as we go through the next several months. But we're ready. We will provide the information that this board has requested. We will again look at every expense that we have and revenues coming in and make those adjustments as we come back in January.
Mr. Graham.
Yeah, I also want to revisit Resolution 2007-47, which is the resolution on fare policy. And I would ask you, Mr. I don't want to go into this in detail today, but I would ask you to review each of these resolve clauses and advise us on what implementation actions you have taken with regard to each of them, because there are requirements relating to the new term, the current board-approved fare policy increase, that I just want to be informed as to what has happened to each of these resolutions. That will inform me in turn about just what the status of this policy is. And I don't think we want to go into that today,
but if
we can formally request a description of management actions and implementation of these issues.
I think that certainly should be a part of the discussion when we get to talking about revenues and fares.
But there's some very specific things here that I
okay.
would
like to do. Any other comments? Do you wish to continue?
Sure.
You have to continue.
On page 34, as Mr. Cato suggested, there are some things that we should look at in terms of our service, which makes sense, actually. Regardless of whether or not we had a budget gap or not, we should actually be looking at aligning bus and rail service to holiday schedules to more reflect what our actual ridership is. I know Mr. Francis and his team are actually working on that now. We should look at possibly looking at multiple entrances and mezzanines and closing exits to the extent we don't have in the evening or at some time where it might make some sense, modifying or opening, evaluating routes that have low criteria and things like that. Those are things that we would do normally to assess our service levels just in the course of business. And so as a result of those items, we actually could, we will be gaining some efficiencies. What they are being worked at now. On page 35, and actually, this is a break in the presentation where now we would look at the capital piece. So I would ask if I could continue on with that.
Please.
Okay. So moving on to capital. As the committee knows, we are in the final year of a six-year commitment with our jurisdictional partners and a program actually that has achieved over $3 billion of capital investment in our rail infrastructure and operations. And most recently, Nat Bodenheimer has presented the capital needs inventory, which identified $11 billion over the next 10 years of needs for the authority. Over the last 6 years, on average, we have our annual program has been about $500 million a year, which is typically what we spend on capital capital investment. And Metro staff has been working with the jurisdictions, with the team that is includes the jurisdictions. There's a working group called
the working group,
and they have been meeting on a regular basis and reviewing the capital program and investments that we are planning to look at for the next 6 years. It's a pro forma look.
Mr. Zimmerman.
The third item there, the number that you use for the assessment of the value of Metro's assets,
mm-hmm.
What's that from?
That's from our balance sheet.
Is that perhaps a typo?
Actually, that is the on our financial statements as of this year, and it is rather low.
I mean, we have in the past valued the rail system at well over $30 billion.
Yes, yes.
It's hard to imagine.
We've invested $10 billion in it.
Right. Well, my question is going to be, you know, what is the basis for the assessment? Is it replacement value? You know, is it some sort of naive, you know, summing of the cost in actual dollars at the time that was built or something?
No, this is actually from our financial statements. And
I assume it's a mistake.
I can go back and get you that.
Could you please get us what the best assessment we have of the current value of the asset?
Yes.
Thank you.
Shall we continue?
On page 36, the six-year plan will be addressed, will obviously address the needs of the authority, and we are looking to, we provide some level of detail actually in the next pages that will give you an understanding of the sources and uses. And if you actually just flip to page 37, this is a pro forma look at from 2011 to 2016 of what we anticipate our sources of revenue will be for capital investment. It looks at our formula funds that we continue to receive now. It assumes that those formula funds will increase 4% in 2011 and in 2012, and then in 2013 through 16 will increase by 5%. In addition, we assume the federal dedicated funds of the $150 million, as well as the local max to that dedicated funds and the local additional funds. In addition, we assume a certain amount of debt funding, as you can see in the out years, which shows out year debt to meet some of the capital needs that we have. We actually have more needs than we have sources of revenue. And as a result, we would have to plug in a certain amount of debt in the outer years to accommodate for that level of investment.
Question.
Mr. Zimmerman.
First, on the table here, it's unfortunate that unlike some of the operating tables we saw earlier, this begins with FY 2011 and doesn't provide any context for what's been, you know, the case in recent years. I think that's really important. We need to understand the evolution since capital, until the most recent budget crisis hit everybody, as the chairman pointed out. This was our budget issue. Our budget issue is mostly a long-term issue. It's a bigger long-term issue than it is a short-term issue, and most of our short-term problems are the result of previous capital budgets not being what they should be. So I think we need to see the data presented in a way that provides context for what has been happening, what we've been doing, particularly because we have some major changes in funding sources that are assumed here. And we need to understand a couple of things, well, at least three. I want to be able to see, as we look at the plans you're presenting for FY 2011, how they are affected by at least three things. One, the changes in Metro Matters funding. Now, that's coming to an end, and a year ago when this budget was presented, it showed the wind down in Metro Matters funding. This, I don't think, does that. But I'm not sure. You can tell. But in any event, it needs to show what happens with the actual Metro Matters funding and what you're going to assume about anything or not assume, so we can just be clear about that.
And it is included in the 2011, but we'll break it out for you so you can actually see.
Is the 2011 what's left as the tail of the existing Metro Matters funding program?
It's included in, it's what's left of the tail.
Yeah.
And it's what's left of what is what we call unobligated this year, the tail, and it's rolled into 2011. That's correct.
But so there's no assumption in any future. You don't have a new Metro Matters in here?
No.
Okay, so that's one answer. But it needs to, we need it. If you put that across the years, we'll see it. We'll see that number go down and something else come in or whatever it is. Secondly, how does the stimulus funds play into this? Because that's a big part. I mean, basically, we made up for the loss in Metro Matters funds in our capital budget effectively by taking, you know, stimulus, which was capital funds, and replacing it there. And that essentially put off what was a major part of our budget problem last year, which is easy for us to forget. But that was, I mean, we had something like $300 million we were going to be out of over 2 years, and we got $200 million in federal money, which replaced a large portion, but not all of it. But that needs to be understood as well. And I think you need to present a way so everyone can see that. We made good use of that money. It's doing stuff we had intended to do but wouldn't have had the money for. So that's good. It's also, A, not all what we really needed to have, and B, runs out. So how much of it is left over that rolls, because it's basically two fiscal years, so I'm assuming some of that is part of your, you know, 20, it's certainly part of your 2010 and 2011 budgets, mm-hmm. presumably.
It's not reflected in here, but we will integrate that.
We need to understand that, how that works.
Okay.
And then the third part, of course, is the federal funding, which you have in here, and the related state funding that you have in here. Again, relate that to what we were doing under our program, what this would be doing, and of course, the fact that this is it's assumed to be funded now in these future years. You're assuming we're gonna get it, because it's in both bills, but it hasn't passed yet, but we're assuming we're gonna get it, okay. And you're assuming that subsequent years they will appropriate it also.
We do.
And that needs to be very clear to everybody as we look at this.
And let me follow up on that, if I may, Mr. Zimmerman. The key to all of this is where are we compared to where we are today, plus our liabilities that are left over from what we have already done. Okay, so we need to see where those fit into this. Is that right, Mr. Zimmerman?
I'm sorry?
We want to see the liabilities from what we've done so far today.
Yes.
And compare it to where we are in 2010 so we can see whether any of these numbers has jumped significantly.
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of, you know, puts and takes on this, because on the one hand, we got some funding. On the other hand, we also took money out, as you pointed out before, you know, for that main. So, I mean, some things push you in one direction, some things push you in the other direction. Ultimately, you need to know where you are relative to where we should be to properly maintain and run the system. That's the real question about the capital budget, the most important question about the capital budget. And especially at this point in our system, it's not about building new. This isn't about building new. This isn't about anything like, for instance, as we in this room know, it's not about Dulles Rail, for instance, which is somebody else's project, actually. This is about maintaining this 106-mile system. And we need to have a way of gauging where we are relative to that and whether we're moving, which direction we're moving with the collective effect of the actions we're taking.
Mr. Giancola.
Yeah, I think that information will be very useful. But I do want to point out that if you look at the numbers here, over the 6 years, and based on what you previously said, we're spending an average of $500 million a year, or half a billion. We're actually seeing significant increases in our capital program, amounting to over $200 million each year.
That's correct. The spending has increased, or the needs have increased. Predominantly, one of the major drivers of that is the rail cars. Which we are looking to replenish, obviously, and that is a big part of the capital program.
Mr. Graham.
But there's also, I don't want to, this is so on point that I wanted to skip ahead a couple of pages. You also have $40 million a year for each of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years. That's $240 million for rehabilitation of buses. And separate from that is replacement of buses to the tune of nearly $500 million. This is capital budget project detail. There it is. And you can see it. And I mean, don't anybody say that I'm against rehabilitating buses. I am. But I mean, at some point, we've got so many new buses in our system that one must at least ask the question, do we need, and $40 million a year is 100 buses at $400,000 each. You know, that's like a new bus. Why are we spending $400,000 to per bus for 100, I don't, see, this is the kind of number that puzzles me.
We can give you more detail, but you need, we do a rehab and overhaul of a bus after 6 years, a major overhaul, where you change the engines, transmissions, where you have a bus. I don't have the, you know, that degree of detail, but you asked the question, why were we spending so much on rehab of buses?
Well, now, here's the question I'm really asking. The question I'm really asking, have we been spending annually $40 million for rehabilitation of buses prior to this budget?
We will go back and show that line.
What are we spending in FY10?
Yeah. We'll go back and show that line.
I don't have that answer.
You don't have that answer?
I do not.
I think Mr. Graham has raised the same issue as Mr. Zimmerman, which is it would be nice to have a base here that we can compare all of it to.
Yeah.
And then we're going to need to go through this to ask the kinds of questions that Mr. Graham has asked for each line and have our staffs review it and understand it and know where we're going with it.
And let me just repeat for the last time something you've said, which is there's going to be no talk of fare increases. There's going to be no talk of service reductions until we really have a sense of confidence about all of these numbers. And this is what we have, and this is what you I heard you say, Mr. Bender. I'm repeating this again, that there are so many questions about the numbers that are presented to us today, not that we don't have great confidence and respect for your abilities, we do, but the fact of the matter is we've got to get a real comfort level with what's going on here. And even a simple question like, $40 million for rehab of buses, how does that relate to what we've been spending each of the last 3 years, as the type of question that has to be answered in order to understand this. Before we go launching into fare increases and major service reductions and everything else on the basis of this kind of foundation.
Mr. Brown, you had a comment?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Benjamin. Has an analysis been done yet on borrowing right now, because money is pretty cheap out there? There's some opportunities with Build America bonds, and that could be, I'm not saying it's the ultimate answer, but it certainly can be part of an answer for some of our issues. Have you done an analysis yet on those?
We have, actually, and on page 37 we have put in debt in the out years, but actually you're correct. There are Build America bonds currently that are very low interest, and the Economic Recovery Act, and debt funding is probably at its lowest levels than we've seen in the last several years. And we would look at that. We have it baked into the out years, but it's something that we are recommending.
Thank you. And also, Mr. Benjamin, not to a great kept secret, but there may be some reshuffling or reprogramming of some of the stimulus dollars to transportation, because the federal government seems to think that maybe that is a good way. You get shovel-ready projects started, great for jobs, and transportation may be the beneficiary of that. And as you know, I've been working with the general manager's office, and we sent a letter to the Hill, to the transportation committee members, to see if they can help us when those dollars do come, that we're first in line to get some of those extra dollars.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Mr. Zimmerman, you had a question.
I hate to have to disagree with my colleague from the district. These numbers will move around a lot, but it would be foolish to leave anybody with the impression that they are going to get substantially better in the next 6 months. And it would be a mistake, I think, to minimize the seriousness of the choices that will have to be made by suggesting that there may be some magic numbers we'll find in here by just grabbing a little out of capital here or something there. And I to say that there'll be no talk of fare increases and service cuts, well, there is. It's here in front of us now. And it's here in front of us now for a reason, because the number is so big, and because last year we got to do most of the things that weren't hard. And those are used up. And you can't go to the same well again. So, the issue usually, it usually gets better. Yes, it's usually the pattern that whatever they tell us in December, it's not quite that bad in March. Except that there are years when it goes the other way. And, you know, when we look at what happened from September to November, you know, things have gotten a lot worse. And so it is not likely that we're going to be in a situation a few months from now putting together a budget that, oh, not much fare increase, not much service cuts, no hard choices. I don't think that's going to happen. And I think that it is vital that in fact the public understand this and understand it now, because our problem can get harder or easier depending upon what other people do in the next several months. When state legislatures go in next month and start talking about what's in their horrible budgets, and they look at the money that goes to a place like this, they need to understand that they make all this worse if they try to solve their problems by reducing the funding here. They need to be able to consider how much they care about what fares people are paying and what service people get, because that's a trade-off for them with other things in their budgets. Same with the local governments that fund this place. They're all going to be making budget decisions. Right now, county managers and governors are drawing up budgets, and they're hard budgets to draw up right now everywhere, and they're thinking about how much goes here or there. And if they don't understand how big a problem we have here, they may make decisions that make it harder in the spring for us to pull this together without having big fare increases, big service cuts, cuts in investment in capital, etc. So I don't want us minimizing too much the seriousness of the situation, because I think it will make things worse when we finally have to do it.
Mr. Graham.
I have to respond to that, because the memory of last year is too fresh on my mind.
Mine too.
You know, Chicken Little, sky is falling, stations are being closed, services are being cut, fares are being increased, and everything else. I mean, we reached the point of actually the real problem. It was $29 million, which was solved in virtually one meeting. You know, and yet when I think of the agony that this authority and its ridership and everybody else experienced, these memories are too fresh for me. And I'm not minimizing the seriousness of what we're facing. I'm just simply saying, let's understand clearly what it is that we have before us. Let's make sure that all of us are comfortable with what we're dealing with in terms of the numbers, the $30 million for advertising revenue loss, and the staff issues relating to salary increases and fringes. I'm just simply saying, let's understand it. Let's proceed deliberately. Let's not go through what we went through last year. I don't want to go through what we went through last year, except for the addition of additional month of agony, because last year we started the agony in January. This year we're starting it in December. You know, I don't want to go through that again. If you all want to go through it, go through it. I don't want to do it. I want to proceed on a deliberate basis. And when we get to the point of saying we need a fare increase, we get to the point of saying we want to reduce services, I want to know that I'm on a solid foundation for those decisions. That's all I'm saying. And no, Mr. Zimmerman, I'm not expecting us to find a number in here that will solve the problem. I'm not expecting that. But what I am insisting on is an absolute solid base of information upon which we can make decisions that are going to be very, very challenging for a lot of people in this region. And I think on that we're all agreeing.
Ms. Hewlett.
I think you're saying the same thing, but putting emphasis on different aspects of it. I think that, is this fine? Anyway, I think that I remember last year very well. And it was a lot of agony, and it was not resolved as simply as you seem to be suggesting right now. It was not simple at all. It was definitely not simple in Maryland or in Prince George's County, where most of the service cuts took place. And we actually ended up bringing more money to the table. It was very, very, very difficult, and I don't want to relive that again either. And it's an impossibility, actually. So in terms of that solution. Those solutions. So we have to look at new solutions. I think what Mr. Zimmerman is saying is that we have to be realistic. No, we don't know. Those numbers are going to change. Those numbers that were up there were going to change. But we have to put on the table, it's likely, it is very likely we're going to see some formula that addresses fare increase, service cuts, and any combination of the above. But you're right, too, in the sense that we want to look at this budget and see that we've cut everything else that could be cut first, recognizing that those things are likely. So I agree with Mr. Zimmerman that we should not minimize this possibility, because it's likely to come. I mean,
so. Ms. Hudgens.
I think we might also want to see where we were last year and how we got to $29 million. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be good to know how we got to $29 million. and also see how close our projections were in the areas that we made, we asked to make those adjustments. Because I think without seeing that, we could be lulled into believing that this is going to go away as easily as the $29 million appeared. I want to know what, I can see numbers, but I can't see the subject areas, that we made additional adjustments as we talked about it and said, we'll adjust here. Let's see on paper what they look like now and where that puts us for an opportunity to make similar adjustments in those areas now that that has occurred. Because I don't see the Metro budget any differently than the budget I have before me at the jurisdiction. And we have no imagination that this is going to improve. And the discussion has started earlier. And it's earlier because the problem is bigger. And the closer we are related to what the realities are each month makes a difference as to the decisions we can make. But the public is engaged earlier as well. So without engaging our public as early as possible and having a reality, I don't think we're going to come up with, well, let's put it this way. We may find a solution for this year, but somebody somewhere in a year in the future is going to deal with the real problem that's created. And it's a question of whether or not we change the service delivery. That's what happened. So I'd like to see those numbers because I think it's important for us to know that we made some decisions last time and we were very much aware that there were some uncertainties as to the long-term impact of those decisions.
Any other comments? You have only a few pages. You think you can get through them?
I think I can. On page 38, 38 actually is a category of where we will make the investments on the capital program. Slightly different than the categories that we have seen in the Metro Matters Agreement. They're actually more expanded. In the old categories, we had really three categories. It was IRP, infrastructure, rail, bus, and bus program and the rail program. And here, actually, we're actually highlighting more specific categories of investment. And then on the following pages, you'll see even a broader detail on page 39, which shows actually where we're going to make those investments. And this is very preliminary. This is being worked on with the JCC, with the jurisdictions, and with our staff on a weekly basis. So this is just a look at what it looks like now. It can change, actually, as we move forward, and I wanted to provide that.
But let me just compliment you on having put together a very, very solid presentation of this information. Obviously, we're talking about $5 billion here in capital. It's one of those things that we're going to need to look at very, very carefully. Our staffs are going to have to review it with you in great detail, and I'm glad to hear that process is going on.
Thank you. If we could just move to page 42, actually. It's the last page in the presentation, and it talks about the next steps that we will need to take. We are doing this rather early, a month earlier than we had done it last year, which affords us more scrutiny on our budget, as you've requested actually here today. But it still provides a framework to the extent that if we do choose to, or if the committee approves public hearings for whether they're fare increases or modifications to service levels, that they would need to be initiated in the January time frame so that they can actually be executed and implemented in March in time for the new budget, which starts on July 1st. So actually, we've given you pretty much a calendar that we could that we're recommending that we should go by.
Now, let me comment on that. I think you've heard very solidly from the committee, all of the board members, that until we really feel comfortable with the revenues and the cost numbers and say we've been able to get every possible dollar of revenues that we think there can be into this program and every cost reduction that we can possibly get, none of us, I think, is going to be ready to talk about service changes or fare changes. Certainly, in January, I doubt very, very much that we're going to be in the process of beginning public hearings on anything and I suspect in February we aren't. So I think you're going to need to put together a different schedule.
Yeah, we will, obviously, with the input that we've received today. And that actually is the end of the first look, if you will, and the framework of what our FY11 challenges are. And I'll end the presentation there.
Okay. Are there any more comments on this presentation or questions? We do have the financial report. Could you at least just tell us where we are relative to our subsidy for the year and where we are relative to our bus and rail ridership? Because that's a lot of what we've been talking about here.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of highlights. In your package for the monthly performance report, I believe it's on page 58. You can see some of the highlights are for the month of October for Metro Rail revenue, we're only down 7%. In the prior month, it was 9%. So it shows that actually we are flattening out and maybe hopefully turning that curve, if you will, in terms of ridership. So that's actually good news. On the overall revenue side, we're down $17 million year-to-date from our budget in the prior month, and that's actually primarily due to the some of the passenger revenue that we've experienced the loss in the last in the first quarter. In the expense side, we actually are over budget by $5 million year to date. Again, that's last month it was $8 million, so we're improving, trying to manage costs, and one of the ways we've been able to do that is to capitalize parts, which have typically been spent with operating dollars, and we've been able to, our controller has been able to look at those programs and determine that they are capitalizable under the GAAP accounting rules. Overall, though, to answer your question, on a year-to-date basis, we have a subsidy loss of $22.6 million, so we're down 12% to budget. And that's the picture that we see now.
Well, I think the summary comment for that is none of the jurisdictions at the present time has got $22 million or even their share of $22 million rolling around, nor do we see the prospect of having them anytime soon.
Right.
So one of the things we're going to need to have from the general manager as we move forward is a plan for how this number gets to zero.
And actually, last month at the FAO committee, we actually presented an overall plan, about $7 million, maybe $8 million, our costs that we can recover under our insurance program as a result of costs we've incurred of the accident. So actually, we have a plan to recover and mitigate the loss if we know that the jurisdictions will want to hold the subsidy even. So
what you may want to do is take that plan and any updates to the plan, since plans like that change almost daily. And on a monthly basis, as you're doing this report, tell us how close you are to carrying out your plan and what changes you've made.
We will do that.
Mr. Giancola.
Yeah, and looking at your capital project financials, I'm a little concerned, I'm going to express some concern over, you know, we're now in the fifth month of obligation and expenditures on the ARRA dollars, and I just really want some assurances from the general manager that we can expend this money, not only obligate it, but also spend it. Clearly, the ARRA dollars added a whole another level of procurement for our existing staff. So that's quite a load of things to process. So I just wanted to alert you to that. I'm a little concerned with the low obligation rate at this point.
We can bring that back to you at the next meeting. I can assure you that those monies have been obligated and will be spent. There was time. We will bring that back to the next meeting.
Thank you.
We have two additional things. One is our subsequent item, subsequent agendas. You can take a look at each one of those. I don't think there's anything significant there. I would like some guidance very quickly from our council, and that is we are interested at this point in having an executive session of the board, I understand. Do we do that before we adjourn this meeting, or do we adjourn this meeting, create a board meeting, and then move in a board meeting? The latter? Okay, so then we will immediately then adjourn unless there is objection. I'm sorry, it was, but you saw one additional item. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I move to postpone the action item until the next regularly scheduled meeting.
Okay. Second.
So, is there any, okay, all in favor?
Aye.
That one is postponed. We will then adjourn this meeting, and immediately we will have our full board meeting. And so, without objection, this meeting is adjourned.
Without objection, I call to order the meeting of the full session of the Board of Directors. And having only one matter before us, I move that the board meet in executive session to discuss personnel matters consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6C. I would note that we will convene an open session of the board following the executive session to act upon any items discussed in executive session, if necessary. But I do want to say to those assembled that it's very unlikely that there would be any reconvening of this meeting. I so move. Is there a second to the motion?
Second the motion.
It's been seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it.
Mr. Chairman, before we go into closed session, can I mention one thing?
I neglected to mention the last meeting.
Okay.
Before staff runs off. We were discussing budget, and we have received, actually directed to you, Mr. Chairman, a communication with some suggestions, about 8 pages worth, from the Amalgamated Transit Union Local 689. And I was going to ask if we could direct the staff to provide us with a response to the specific proposal.
I have that. Else. I have that in hand. And so we can...
I'd like to, you know, see some work done.
There were some very good ideas there, and I believe the staff said that a lot of those are already incorporated in the presentation we just saw, but you want to have a line-by-line, how do they dispose of it?
Some of them look like they might be good ideas, and
anyone
looking for ideas.
I think the union did an excellent job on that and making some very good suggestions to help us.
Okay, there being no further business before the board, this meeting stands in recess. Thank you.